Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Saturday morning Bible study. Today is Saturday, November 18th, 2017. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And this morning, our moderator is Amanda from Missouri.
Thank you. Good morning. And to begin, I will read portions from essays that are attributed to Mrs. Eddy, and they're found in the Red Book. The scriptures are not only to be regarded as authentic, but as containing the science of being, even the truth of God and man, yea, of soul and body. Therefore, they are an infallible guide when understood. I love to read my Bible in the mother tongue, in its spiritual sense. I read it so at home, in my secret sense of God, and have come to you today to read it thus, and with a prayer that your eyes shall not be heavy that you cannot see, nor your ears dull, but the spiritual sense shall be active and take in my simple version.
That is beautiful. We could read that every week. That's wonderful.
Wake up!
Yes.
The mother tongue. I love that.
Yeah.
And the mother tongue silences all disputes about the Bible, about its authenticity or accuracy or anything. Because it's the mother tongue that speaks to the heart. It gives us guidance, strength, and inspiration, everything we need.
Are we ready to begin, or would anyone else like to have further comments on that quote?
Well, I was just, the only other comment is, you know, people talk about the mother tongue as being the language that they were brought up with. And the original language that we were all brought up with is our spiritual sense of the Word of God. And it doesn't matter what human language the Bible was written in. Translation of it has to be spiritual, and the interpretation of it through spiritual sense. So when we all read it in the mother tongue, we seem to get so much out of it. And there's nothing contradictory about it. When people read it in a human language, they come up with all kinds of contradictions and misinterpretations, even questions about its authenticity, all that nonsense, and they miss the whole point.
It just doesn't make sense that way, and it turns everybody off.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Amanda.
Okay, thank you. The topic for today is the goodness of all creation. So to start with question one, what are the spiritual qualities that are represented by the creatures of the sea, air, and earth? And then in addition to fish, birds, and cattle, as referenced in Genesis 1, please think of other creatures that you may wish to include in the discussion. And the creatures referenced in Isaiah 11, 6 through 9 were mentioned as well.
I really love this question. It is really, really beautiful to think about what these things actually mean. In Genesis, the chapter in Science and Health, there was a line there, the spirit is symbolized by strength, holy thoughts winged with love, abound in the spiritual atmosphere of mind. And that's what I've brought to mind, the birds in the air.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'd like to talk about the deer. deer is, it seems to be my favorite animal in the whole Bible. When I first started in Christian Science, and I was very enlightened and full of zeal, I saw a show on TV about a deer where it had protected its young from a wolf by limping, pretending it was limping so the wolf would chase after it. And it's like something came on inside of me that was so real that was how God cares about his children, that the qualities of a deer, the spiritual qualities of the deer, love and alertness and intelligence, kindness, tenderness, wisdom, and parenthood. And it was like the first time I ever saw that, the real, what parenthood was. It was the first time I ever saw and understood the spirit in an animal.
Thank you, Lillian.
Yeah, animals have a spiritual sense, don't they? People say that when a tidal wave is approaching, a lot of the animals know to run from the water and go to higher ground. Seen pictures on YouTube of a mother tiger taking in a baby of some other species and nursing it. Rather than eating it.
Yeah, because I love animals. I get these YouTube of all these beautiful stories of animals and their intelligence and their wisdom and how they do. There was one about a tigress who found a hurt fox, and the fox was terrified, but she took care of the fox and kept it like one of her own. And when the lion came and acted like, "What are you doing? I think this will make a tasty meal," she fought back. It was all on camera. It was very beautiful. You just see it. So many examples of the beauty and the intelligence. These are all God's creatures. And when we're knowing the truth about them, they will. And it's very interesting. Mrs. Eddy says that they are not carnivorous. And what does that mean?
They don't eat each other. They don't eat flesh.
Right.
They're not supposed to anyway.
Yes. I think eventually, I'm sure that's the high ideal, not to. And there's been much exposure now about the cruel treatment of some animals that are kept in pens, you know, just solely to be eaten. All of this must stop, any cruelty to any of God's creatures, and we should be praying for this every day in our prayers.
I think also the fact that they can unite. I saw once an elephant had a baby, and some animal was coming after it, and they all gathered, all the whole herd gathered around it and protected it. I mean, you know, humans, we seem to dwell on our differences so much, the superficial differences so much, and yet here's, you know, animals teaching us together, united, before the enemy.
Thank you. And you know, these stories of, what is it, dolphins who've saved people who have been shipwrecked, or porpoises? Or when a human has saved them, that they've expressed gratitude. I mean, I've seen YouTubes of whales just, you know, leaping in the air when they've been freed from ropes, and as if to thank those who had freed them.
Yeah, well, God expressing himself
Thank you.
I think that the Lamb of God is an image for Christ. And then I think of Jesus talking about the fact that he was the good shepherd, giving his life for the sheep. And that the sheep would only follow the right kind of shepherd.
That's right. A sheep knows their shepherd's voice. It won't follow anyone else, any other voice. I saw something beautiful yesterday on a YouTube that was sent to me that was about prisoners who are being given shelter animals to care for, and how much that meant. I mean, what a great thing to have that united. It gives the shelter animal of someone that loves them, and the prisoner someone to love and take care of. And then another where the prisoners were being taught how to train service dogs while in prison, and they were training service dogs, and then these service dogs are given to, you know, veterans or blind people, people in need.
And police departments to use.
Pardon me?
And police departments to use those trained animals, the trained dogs.
Yes, they say they couldn't do it without the dogs. The dogs that find all the drugs, and just by sniffing, and, you know, they can find whatever. It's amazing. And the dolphins, too. I think the military uses dolphins for various things.
Oh, yeah, checking for mines.
Yeah.
Because they're smart and they can detect them, but they're also graceful enough not to set them lost.
That's right.
Amazing.
It is absolutely amazing when they're seeing correctly. You know, that beautiful prayer, Coleridge's prayer, it's from the Rime of the Ancient Mariner. He prayeth best who loveth best. All things, both great and small. For the dear God that loveth us, he made and loveth all. It's a good prayer to know, to say, and to teach your children.
I wanted to also the flock of starlings, talking about like thousands of birds, and yet they fly in unison with each other in various formations. It doesn't appear like any one of them was selected to be the leader, but yet they all know what to do and at the right time. Magnificent display.
And they're in such tight proximity and they never collide.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
No, I was thinking that a lot. When I first read this question, I wasn't really sure how to approach it. So I started thinking about myself coming here. You know, what were the lies and the counterfeits about myself, and how did that change? So then I was thinking about the birds. You know, you say bird-brained, and it's almost like they're beneath notice most of the time. But, yeah, we came out of lunch yesterday, and we saw those birds.
You know,
we did. And they were just flying like that, and then two equal groups split off from each other and went and did different things. It was really quite amazing, and, you know. And then their song.
The intelligence, how they know where to fly. There's another beautiful poem, I didn't bring it, but it's called To a Waterfowl by William Cullen Bryant. And he's just praising this fact that birds know where to fly. And that same hand that guards and guides them, guards and guides us, will show us and bring us home. It's a beautiful, beautiful poem. And Mrs. Eddy talks about the tireless worm. You know, all the creatures, which leads me to some creatures who have this, you know, bad reputation. I've given this to some people when dealing with pests. It's in Lessons of the Seventh Day. On page 341, Mrs. Eddy says, Mosquitoes are an attack of mortal mind, using our consciousness to annoy us. A belief of pest does not exist. Correct it, prove it, and then it blesses us. This is a very grievous thing that mortal man has done to all any of these little creatures, infinitesimal, some of them, give them, you know, to say they have this power to make us sick. Who said that? This negates all of that. It says that everything God made was good. Everything that creepeth upon the earth. So we have to nullify this belief that mosquitoes or ticks or mites or whatever else have power to harm. God never said that. In Matthew Henry, though, he says, many of them have become, speaking of the creatures, many of them have become enemies of men since men became rebels to God.
That makes sense.
So, but if you are not a rebel to God, as we find in the story of Daniel, the story of Paul, you can render these so-called dangerous or destructive creatures, this is Eddie says, harmless, useful, indestructible. In the lesson, all of God's creatures, all. She doesn't say some, she says all. So I had to ask myself, am I thinking of any creatures as other than an expression of God?
At one time I used to be up in a neighborhood where there's a lot of black flies, and they were notorious for being annoying. And one time I was outside talking to somebody, and a guy had lived there all his life. He comes up and says, you know, these guys make so much issue over these black flies. You know what? They feed on fear. So if you're not fearful, they don't bother you. He lived up there all his life.
Interesting.
Wow, that's great.
Now, there's someone who understands a little bit about science. And lives it.
And they do. I mean, we are taught that all animals, they'll feel the fear. Horses, dogs, you approach them with fear and dislike, just like human beings. You approach them with love, they feel that too.
And that's why Daniel was safe in the lion's den.
Knowing the love that
controls
had of all, yes.
So man, you know, carries the same fearful perceptions of animals to their own, to people, too.
Absolutely. That's what starts wars, doesn't it?
Yes.
It's really funny because when I was young, mosquitoes and black flies bothered the heck out of me, and I thought as I got older, I got more sour and they didn't like me anymore, but now I realize that I've become more loving, so that's a good thing.
Isn't that interesting? This is what Bruce was saying.
Right, well, that's why it came to me that way.
Right. That's very helpful. Thank you. I do know Mrs. Eddy, let's say she had a pleasant view of a pond or something, and she would approach the pond. And the fishes would come up to her because they felt her loving thought. So again, spiritual ideas.
There's an article on the website, Mrs. Eddy and the Goldfish, that Ira Knapp wrote.
That's
right. And yes, and it speaks of her with the goldfish. And that there were dogs that would come to drink out of the fountain. So there was a contraption designed so that the dogs could drink out of the fountain and the fish could be where they needed to be. And she would come and she would come and speak to them. And I can't remember where it is, but I believe it's somewhere in miscellaneous writings where Mrs. Eddy wrote of her going to her pond to feed the fish. And she talks of feeding these little ideas, that they were feeding from her, not just the breadcrumbs themselves, but they were being nourished by her thought. And I always thought that was so beautiful.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It says a lot about love, isn't it, that universal language that every creature responds to, really.
It does. Well, and why not? Because love is the only power that created the universe in the first place.
Yes.
The thought that came to me about the fish is that in being in the water, there was that fluidity about them. And then I remembered what we had talked about, meekness being able to take different shapes like water in a glass. And so the next thought that came was that they were also expressing meekness in that fluidity.
Oh. A beautiful thought.
Yeah.
And just like the birds, they when they school up, they play a lot of unity too.
They do. And you know, they say like the penguins, they mate for life. I think geese, Canada geese, mate for life. Care for their young. The land said their parenthood. And how do they know all that? They just know, because they're reflections of the divine mind.
There was a wonderful movie about penguins, but I don't remember it too well. I don't know if anyone else saw it, about their mating. And, you know, they were just like little people. It was just amazing.
Yeah, I think I did see that years ago. It was very popular for a while, penguins and what they do. All of them, every creature.
There's a beautiful video how Diablo, the Black Panther, became spirit. And it is one of the most beautiful things and really changed my thought about animals and how they truly are all ideas of the one mind. And they're so aware of their spirituality, even more so, I think, than some people are. But I can post that on the forum. It's so beautiful, and how the animal communicators connect spiritually with all sorts of animals. And it really does prove to me that they are spiritual creatures first, and just like we are. And we can see that. I can see that in our pets when we're feeling, sometimes when we're feeling down, they can feel it and they'll come up and they'll nudge against you to give you some comfort. It's really beautiful.
It really is, yes.
I thought that video was on our website. That was one that Parsons found us.
We did have it on the carousel for a while.
Yeah.
Did feature it.
Yeah, this panther had been captured in a zoo or mistreated, and they called him Diablo, which means devil. And he was very mean to everyone. And finally someone who I don't know what you'd call an animal whisperer, could sense their thoughts, was able to communicate with him. And once that changed, and they changed his name and loved him, and he changed entirely. He was also worried at the last place he'd been.
Yeah, he had a friend who was
an animal.
A horse or something.
Yeah, horse.
Ooh. And he was separated from his friend. And he felt really sad that he had been separated from his friend, the horse.
And worried what had happened to him.
And the animal whisperer learned that just through communicating spiritually with Diablo, and they went back, and he was so happy to see his friend again.
before that, did the people feel that they had to put him down?
Yeah, they were ready to put him down because he was so starling and uncooperative. And it's a beautiful video, and was found. We had it on our carousel for some
time. It's interesting that Jesus' disciples were fishermen.
Yeah.
And that they knew nature. And, of course, he said, if you follow, at one point, they couldn't get any fish, and Jesus came and said, cast, you know, not the last time, but another time when they couldn't find any fish. Peter objected when Jesus said, just go ahead, you're going to get the fish. And Peter said, oh, no, there are not any. And then they did it, but he said, because you said to do it, Jesus, I will do it. So they went out, and they had so much fish they could hardly, they couldn't take it all in the boat. And that's when he said, come with me, and I will make you fishers of men.
Going back to the cat, I'd just like to say it was renamed Spirit. Spirits was its nature.
And it responded to that. To that right thinking.
That really is one of the most beautiful videos I've ever seen. It's just beautiful. The transformation, it's just incredible. Just by people, what they're thinking about it.
That's it. So think of what your thought does when you're angry or hateful. Think of how it affects your children. You think they don't know what you're thinking. They know what you're thinking, even though you don't say it. They know. Not just your children, everybody.
Well, and it was a beautiful lesson for us. One of the many lessons I got out of it was when you see a person who's snarly and angry, maybe even criminal, is that person's real nature? Or is there some experience they've had or something they're very fearful of that causes them to act that way?
Yeah, I've tried to apply what I've learned from some dogs I've worked with in the past to what you just spoke of, Gary. There was a period of time when I was doing animal rescue, and at that time there were a lot of pit bulls that had been severely abused, and so they would come in and be in a bad physical condition and growling and snarling and all of these things. But the group that was working with them was so loving, and they didn't see that snarling, dirty pit bull. They just saw this beautiful animal that they loved, no matter what. And it was quite a lesson to see, because you could almost see the fear and all of this just fall off of them, because there was that moment when they understood they were loved and safe, and it's just that aggression, it almost fell out of them. You could see it, and they were transformed, and so many so quickly. And they didn't carry these scars or other things that happened to them. They just instantaneously transformed. And that's been something I've tried to apply in dealing with people that seem to have a very troubled history, especially if it's something they seem to carry with them for quite some time, that they can have an instantaneous transformation by seeing them the way they need to be seen.
And that's wonderful, and that's our job.
That's a Christian Science treatment, and that's unfailing proof how it works.
We can do it for ourselves, too.
Yep.
All those old wrong thoughts.
Well,
that we hold about ourselves, yes, they can change. If we change those, they change too. Mrs. Eddy says that change the belief and the sensation changes. Destroy the belief and sensation disappears. And she also says that when we see something not yielding, that means there's more love to be given.
Yes.
Yes.
while ago, Carol found in the 1936 college, it was something Mrs. Bignell Young, 1936 college, she said that the root of it all is always fear, whatever it is, always fear. And that has to be held and handled.
And the most potent answer to the fear is love.
Yes.
Yeah. But it was, I found something that Spurgeon had written, and it appears to be specifically in response to animal cruelty cases that had been happening at that time, but I thought it applies to all creation.
Okay. So there's a lot of good lessons, aren't there?
Yes.
We can learn from animals when we see what's going on.
And we can learn not to rebel against God.
Well, yeah, exactly.
And force them into that place.
Well, I couldn't help but think, you know, talking about what we can learn. People, you know, animal shelters, people seeing them right. And that's what it means when Zeddy wrote, Jesus beheld Zion's the perfect man. If we see each other right, we have the same results. And that is how Christian Science heals.
When we see each other right, we are actually seeing God.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he is all.
Yeah. And when we see the animals right, we see God, and they teach us wonderful lessons, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
Mrs. Eddy has said in Science and Health that their natures are allied to God's nature. That's a pretty wonderful alliance. We and all creation are allied to God, with him, and he with us.
And Benson supports that when he said that all of us creatures have righteousness, equity, faith, grace, utmost peace, all under the care of the Messiah.
Thank you, Shardy.
There is something Charles Spurgeon wrote that I thought was so beautiful and helpful too, not just animals, but everyone. And this is from his writing, A Word for Brutes Against Brutes. For the man who truly loves his maker becomes tender towards all the creatures his Lord has made. In gentleness and kindness, our Redeemer is our model. He who dwells in God has a great heart which encompasses all creation. And it goes on, as it were, lives in it all like the soul and the body, feeling akin with all, yea, one with all life, so that it joys in all true joy and sorrows in all sorrow. To me, that just spoke of the oneness of all creation, because all is in him. There's nothing outside of him that he did not make. Nothing else can come in.
That's beautiful. You should put that on the forum.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, any other comments before we move on?
I just wanted to add, Mrs. Eddy talks about the lion as representing moral courage, and the lion of the tribe of Judah, the king of the mental realm, free and fearless, it roams the forest. And there's been times where I like to think of this, if I'm afraid of something, I think of like a lion in my thought, going to the little recesses of my thinking and you know, just that moral resolve has helped give me strength.
Thank you. Yeah, we should all have a bit of a lion in us.
Well, in the references in Isaiah, as Isaiah said, the creatures that it talks about in Isaiah, what it's saying is that the so-called domesticated animals are going to walk around with the so-called wild animals. And the wild animals aren't going to eat the domesticated animals. They're going to be friends.
Every idea of God has a purpose.
And what it's expressing, I think, is the truth about them.
And that purpose isn't just to be meek.
Yeah, right. Not just to be meek.
You can imagine a lion eating straw. That's what it says. The lion will eat straw like the ox. It won't be fierce and destructive.
That's what Mary started with. They are not carnivorous.
Yes.
We've thought of them that way, and now they are, but they're not.
It said the child will play near the snakes, too, and put his hands around there and be unharmed.
Yes, we are, and I'm going to, Gary will read a little bit from first edition, too, where she reiterates all this.
Up here. And God made the beasts of the earth after his kind, and cattle after their kind, and saw that it was good, end quote. The beast and reptile, made by love and wisdom, were neither carnivorous nor poisonous. Love never created hatred, nor truth error.
Enough, yeah. It goes on for a couple pages, but it's excellent, 234 in first edition. She reiterates this about, we are not carnivorous, nor are any animals. This is all part of the Adam dream, the human belief of things.
So shall we move on to?
Yes, we have. This was a question we've never taken up that thoroughly, and it's a very important one. Thank you for it, Amanda.
Yeah, that's one to think about.
It is.
Yeah. Well, we'll move on. I was just going to mention one thing very quickly about one other creature, because it leads right into question two, is with the possum, which I've always been very partial to. I know many people seem to not be fond of them, but they have something within their system that essentially makes them impervious to venom, to poison, snake venom. And so, like Paul, like all of us, the possums too are immune to venom and poison. Question two is, why did the viper strike out at Paul, and how did Paul react when attacked by the venomous beast?
Any thoughts? Anybody have any ideas?
Well, the idea I got after thinking about all this other stuff was that the viper was just reacting to that fearful thought that was going on around Paul. Not in Paul. Paul wasn't reacting to that spot, so he had no problem casting it off.
From reading that story, it gave me a picture of somebody that, even though he'd been bitten by a snake, was still calm, cool, collected, and confident in his God. It was a pretty amazing picture, actually.
Why does anything or anyone attack anything or anyone else?
Usually out of fear.
Yes.
Or hatred.
Yes. And is it a personal thing or is it an impersonal thing?
Impersonal.
Yeah. It's a personal, it's an attack, an impersonal attack on the Christ, on the truth. It's out of fear, it's out of ignorance, out of fear, or hatred.
The Christ is so pure, there is no reaction to it. He was totally untouched. It could not do it.
Right. But when anything ever attacks you, what is it?
It's an attack on our Christ, and it can't do it.
And it's impersonal. Yes. If you think it's personal, what are you going to do?
Yeah,
you're going to attack back.
I
I can see the viper as just a gentle idea that was probably sleeping in the sticks, and then they were gathered up and set on fire, and all of a sudden it was in the heat, and it wasn't trying to attack Paul. It was just reacting from heat, in a sense, but it's actually just a gentle, you know, idea, and Paul kind of knew that it was, he wasn't taking it personally, and that it was just that situation, and he threw it off and knew it was just a gentle thing, and he wasn't hurt.
One of the things I was thinking about is the reaction that they had. They immediately condemned Paul as deserving this before they saw him survive it. But I came across in Footsteps on page 54, and Carpenter is talking about that sometimes on along the path that you may get, you find yourself involved in a situation and get buffeted about, is the word he used. And he says, quote, "If he is a buffeted and suffers because he's walking the path of human destiny, that is one thing. But if he suffers in an honest attempt to throw off the belief in a human destiny and to show others how this can be done through divine help, then he deserves the highest praise." And I thought that was a very powerful thought, because often, sometimes when you see people go through things, especially our Christian brothers and sisters, you could be tempted to condemn when you see them going through a challenge. And it's, I think, very dangerous and unloving, and it also could be false, what you're seeing. You know, I mean, wrong judgment when the person is actually throwing off and showing how it can be done.
Thank you.
Yep.
Yeah, it's very important. There's a watching point in which it speaks about that, especially when people newer in science or maybe see those who've been in science a long time who are having difficulties or struggles, and they might think, well, what's the matter with them? And yet they have no idea what that person might be having to meet at that level of understanding. I mean, you take Mrs. Eddy, for example. People could be critical of her, all the things she had to overcome. We must not judge. That's what we call the culture, the organization. I remember it was very common. That's why some people never wanted to admit they had a problem. Because if they admitted they had a problem, they would come under some kind of condemnation or judgment. We are not in the judging business. That is Christ, Christianity. That is the Sermon on the Mount.
God alone judges.
Also, he was in a holy state of thought his whole life. I mean, think of what he was on the boat, and he said, "For there stood by me this night the angel of God, whose I am and whom I serve." One of my favorite things in the Bible, that quote from Paul, and as Elizabeth wrote about it on the forum, which is beautiful. But do we address ourselves in this way? We belong to God. We serve God. Are we knowing this every moment? We must be. And because he was in that divine state that this viper could not hurt him.
And then he was able to heal people on the island.
Yes, he was.
Yes.
That was beautiful, because when they saw that he was, they thought, a god, then he was offered to be staying in the chief man's house, I think. The father was sick, and he healed him. And then other people came to him and were healed.
And, you know, Christ Jesus did the same thing. He would rebuke things, and right after that, he would go on to heal.
that take us to question three?
Sure. How did Paul wind up on the island? Sure.
Yeah, I just want to, you know, I was just thinking that, you know, Paul just shook the viper off. And think about that is when thoughts come to us that are, don't seem to be from God, you know, to get rid of those thoughts, you know? And just a thought there, but.
Yeah, no, that's true. And this was more than a thought. This was, you know, this was a presumably a physical attack.
Well, it was for Paul, but I'm thinking for ourselves, we go about our day, you know, like, you know, a lot of thoughts might come about worry or fear or make a mistake or something like that. And you think, you know, that those are thoughts, you just get rid of them, just like Paul got rid of the viper, you know. That was kind of like an illustration for us and how to deal with these thoughts that are not from God.
Yeah. No, I'm agreeing with you, and I'm saying
even
when someone comes up to you and starts chewing you out for something you didn't do,
you shake it
off.
You shake it off.
Don't react, fight, and argue back. You shake it off.
Turn to God always.
Yeah, and don't let it get... Don't let it spoil your disposition. Don't let it ruffle your feathers.
That's the one thing it wants to do. And if it can't do that, it's done nothing. This is Eddie says, when error has howled and howled, it has done nothing. It's only when it can get you to react and to lose your Christ consciousness, then it's in belief, it seems to have done something. So... But I have to say, I could do a lot better with this. I know if I would see something like that, I would probably squish. So I'll work on this. I've been known to do that. You know, there is a story about Mrs. Eddy. It was in one of those DVDs, right, when she saw something.
Oh, yeah.
What was it, Jeremy? She saw a spider on it.
I believe that's what it was, a spider.
Yeah, and
she said that.
Yelled or something.
Did she say that was Mary?
That was Mary. That's Mary speaking. That wasn't the
guy. Funny, yes.
Yeah.
Well, I know since coming here, I found that I guess the best way to describe it is like the delay between something happening and me realizing the truth about it. It steadily gets shorter and shorter, you know.
That's progress. So.
Yes.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it's also wonderful when all this is spoken about here, when things come up on my own, then I can just say, oh, that's what this is. This is something to get me to stop working. And that's foolish, and I'm not going to do it. So I'm very grateful for that.
Thank you. That's impersonalizing it, and that's working with the daily duty, alertness to duty. You won't be made to forget or neglect your duty to God, your leader, and to mankind. That impersonalizes the attack, and it enables you to keep going stronger than before.
Plus, I've already spent decades living the other way, and I don't really want to go back to that. Tried that all the way. It didn't work.
Great. Great.
Number three, Amanda? Got a few minutes.
Yes, number... Three is how did it, oh excuse me how did Paul wind up on the island of Melita, and where is it located?
Can't be a long story, but we'll try to.
A lot of wind blowing around. Pretty fierce. And between you and me, I think the hand of the Lord was on the whole thing and brought them to Melita. Because we know afterwards that they were barbarous people that were kind to them. And I don't know if they would have had what they had if they had ended up someplace else. But obviously, even though it appeared like a fierce storm, and behind it all, there was a divine direction going.
Where was he? Where were they going? And why?
Going to Rome.
You're going to Rome.
They were going to Rome, and why?
Taking prisoners.
Presented before Caesar.
Mm-hmm.
There was a main purpose for this trip. And even though Paul was a prisoner, the angel of the Lord told Paul that everyone on the ship was given to him. God hath given thee all them that sail with thee. Really? And here, Paul was one of the prisoners?
Yes.
Yes.
And he knew that they would all be safe, didn't he? Even during the middle of the storm, he said, don't worry, that God's here and God will take care of us. And it's very interesting because I read, well, it was a little news thing, but in the 60s, some fishermen off the coast, it's the island of Malta, they found four anchors off that coast. And they didn't think anything of it because they didn't know the story. But four anchors were dropped. And they identified those anchors as Roman, you know, Roman terror. And it says now they're in some museum, just saying four Roman anchors. But this person who was telling the story was quite convinced that it was from this boat. Because of the placement of it and everything else. It totally fits the short description of where they put those anchors in the Bible.
Why not?
And why not?
So you could say that Paul was sent there.
Yes, he was.
Not only that, all those obstacles that everyone else thought was really bad, he was given those obstacles to overcome, you know, any expectations that these people had. Those people had much different perspective by the end of all this of what was possible and good and real. So I'm sure that all helped. I'm sure.
Yeah, this was an experience that everybody benefited from.
You know, I think there's something interesting from this about making decisions. Before they left, Paul had advised them not to go, but they didn't listen to him.
Yeah.
So if they hadn't gone, you know, obviously they would have missed the storm, so then they'd be fine, you know. But then they went, and then they had this huge storm, so then they're all at risk. But they're okay anyway. So it's kind of one way of looking at it. You're trying to make a decision about what to do. And if you do what you think is right, even if it's not the right decision, they were protected either way, if you think about it, you know?
Yeah, and they were protected because Paul was with them.
I agree with you, because if you make a decision in a not good way, well, I don't know. That's not so good, but if you're doing it, what you think you're doing is right, you know?
And Paul was on a special mission because he had requested to go before Caesar, which was really a very risky thing on a material basis. He wanted to espouse or bring Christianity to the top of the Roman Empire.
Yeah, God sent him, and he knew it. So he made lemonade out of all the lemons that were thrown.
Exactly.
And that must have been a big deal because it's now called St. Paul's Bay.
Yeah.
So it's remembered.
Yes, and I've read the island has had no venomous beast creatures on there since that time. And it says it's also the most, quote, religious place in all of Europe. So, anyway. It left quite a mark, Paul, the Apostle Paul being there.
Mm-hmm. We have time for one more question?
Yeah, I think we can answer this.
Yeah, we talked about it a bit. How did the barbarous people of Melita react to Paul?
They were very kind in the beginning to him. And then they thought he was a murderer when the viper came.
Anybody
was
with a god. They sort of changed back and forth, but generally speaking, they were very kind to him. They were strangers. They were very kind.
And I read they were building the fire because they were all wet from the water.
Yeah.
And it was to keep them warm, and they made room around the fire for all the people.
So even though they were barbarous people, this kindness that they had, it's so interesting that they welcome these, you know, the shipwrecked people.
They were barbarous, is people's perception, perhaps.
Exactly. Thank you, Florence.
Yeah.
Who said they were barbarous?
They were only barbarous because they weren't Roman. That's the only reason.
And really, the moral of this whole story is what you see is what you get.
Mm-hmm.
So much for judging people, right?
Yeah. Animals, people.
Any of God's creatures.
Oh, God.
Yep.
Was Mike
in the... Yes, barbarous in the Strong's Concordance isn't what it is today of being uncivilized, cruel, and coarse. It was actually separate, different. So, like somebody just said, different from the Romans, so they were considered barbarous.
Oh, good. Thank you. That's right. And
they
were, be careful if you think someone isn't just like you, doesn't look just like you, or act just like you, or have the same views, do you consider them weird or strange or barbarous? We better not. Go ahead, Shardy.
Oh, sorry. They were Phoenicians.
They were what?
Phoenicians. Their ancestry was Phoenicia, and they were rivals of Rome. They were overcome by Rome eventually, but they were rivals of Rome.
There you go.
That's why.
Yeah. And the word barbarous was applied from the pirates from the Barbary Coast, the Muslims that were attacking Christians and stealing and plundering and stuff.
Selling them as slaves.
Selling them as slaves. That's where the word barbarous comes from. And so we can take this today, and we see Islam, in the name of Islam, doing cruel and barbarous things. But are the people themselves barbarous? No, they're just misled. They're filled with fear, and they are misled. But they are God's creatures. And love is the answer.
This is how we defang anything that would appear to be poison, by knowing this truth. This is our work. This is why we watch.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, and thank you.
Amanda.
Amanda was a wonderful.
Thank you, Amanda.
Thank you.
Amanda also wrote this lesson, so we thank her too.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
With lots of help. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.